Now, Denise Morris and Victoria Saucedo review Roma. Directed by Alfonso Cuarón, Roma has been at the center of much discussion and debate for its fictionalized portrayal of Cuarón's middle-class childhood, with his mother and nanny at the center of the film's story, set against the backdrop of a political upheaval in 1970-1971 Mexico City. Denise and Victoria will discuss Roma from the perspective of what is in the film and take up some of the criticisms that focus on what is missing in the film in terms of character and politics. Denise and Victoria?
Thank you, Tom. Yes, I am Denise Morris, and I am here with Victoria Saucedo, who is at long last joining us for an Old Mole segment. It's been a long time coming. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
We're super excited to be doing this particular film because it's beyond juicy to talk about, for sure.
It is beyond juicy, and I absolutely feel that it is a gorgeous rendition of love and memory, and I
will openly admit I love the movie.
Yeah, we are both openly admitting we were very struck by it in all of its tensions and contradictions, and we'll hopefully get to talk as much about that stuff as we can. There's a lot to cover on this film, but we'll provide people, of course, with lots of good links once it's posted. Let me just do a quick intro here on the film, and we will talk about it in depth, and there will probably be spoilers, but we'll try to keep that to a minimum. Roma is a 2018 drama film written and directed by Alfonso Cuarón, as Tom said. And he also produced, co-edited, and shot the film. It's a co-production of Mexico and the United States, but I feel it's really firmly a foreign film in that sense. This is a Mexican-made film.
Absolutely, and, yeah, absolutely.
And received that way in Mexico, clearly from reviews and
correct, a Mexican response. Production with Mexican movie stars, with Mexican actors.
And non-professional and actors.
Non-professional actors, correct.
Right, and in particular, Yalitza Aparicio,
Aparicio.
Why can I, yeah, why, what
okay.
happened to me?
Yalitza Aparicio.
She is Cleo in the film, who plays the live-in domestic worker, nanny, and housekeeper, Marina de Tavira. She is actually a professional actress, and she plays the mother character. Those are the two central characters in the film. On the set in 1970 and 71, the film is semi-autobiographical, and I'll stop there. The title refers to Colonia Roma. That's the neighborhood in Mexico City where Cuarón grew up, and Roma has also been referred to as biographical. Liboria Rodriguez, who is the real Cleo in Cuarón's life, provided a lot of detailed information over the years about what, you know, her life was like outside the home, and Cuarón used that information to develop Cleo and Adela, her co-workers, lives and relationships that we see in the film.
Correct. And the actress that portrays Adela, her name is Nancy Garcia. So she also functioned as the co-live-in domestic worker. But in real life, she and the actress Yalitza, they're actually best friends in real life. And also Nancy served as a consultant for Alfonso for all things Mexica.
Yeah. Yeah. So to kind of get us going in our sensibility about our take on the film and how we want to talk about it, I wanted to start with a quote from Guillermo del Toro. Quote, "In every sense, Roma is a fresco, a mural, not a portrait. The audiovisual information, context, social unrest, factions and politics, morals of the time, exists within the frame to be read." So with this in mind, Victoria, we really did choose from the beginning to look at what is in the film because we really both agree that Roma's message is embedded in what, quote, exists within the frame to be read. You know, there are these questions about voice and agency, inequality, invisibility, as well as love and memory, we believe are answered within the parameters of the story being told and in the way that it is told, that those things aren't separate. And I think that's been a lot of controversy around an artistic film, a film that looks good, can that film actually be something that tells us about inequality, that tells us about the both beauty and the kind of ugly underbelly?
Correct, because again, there is no doubt throughout the course of the film, from beginning to end, that Cleo's character, she is emphatically at work. She's always being told what to do, not necessarily how to do it, but she's being asked to get drinks, to get food, to do this, to do the dry cleaning, to clean the patio that is forever covered in poo from the poor dog that never gets a walk.
Right, that dog, I mean, many reviewers have noted that that dog is prolifically...
Absolutely.
You know, evacuating.
Sure, but, you know, and the opening sequence, I do think, grabs you immediately. People talk about, you know, it's this slow panning shot with the gorgeous flagstones, and you're wondering what's happening. You can hear the sound, and then all of a sudden that you see the water, and then more water, and it's progressively more, and it's soapy, and it's dirty, and it's getting dirtier all the time. And so in our discussions of the film, we've talked about how the surface of almost anything is sort of this clean, pristine surface, but that the more you scratch at something, the dirtier something is revealed to be, that you can get at that dirty underbelly. So I know I definitely took it as a metaphor of the film, that you can see this middle class life that is complicit in the, you know, what the inequality and the taking away of rights of indigenous peoples in Mexico. And you can see that that's happening within the family, that's happening in the country. And that's that metaphor again of the water getting dirtier and dirtier and dirtier.
It does really set the stage, I think, for
the entire movie.
For the entire film, you know. So interestingly, or, you know, impactfully, the first 20 minutes of the film is literally spent with Cleo through her day.
Correct.
And it includes her relations, times with the family, times working alone, which are important pieces, because I think what Cuarón does in that first 20 minutes is to make something visible that has been invisible, both within his family and to his own eyes as a 10-year-old, but also to the world at large, domestic workers working in a home.
And you're at work.
You're at work, and nobody's there to see you do the work. Adela is there, but she also works. They work very separate. And so through that opening, we see her daily routine evolve. And one of the things that first comes up is they've been working, and then all of a sudden she realizes she has to go pick up the youngest.
Pepe,
and she's running late to pick him up. You know, in a sense, it sort of brings us all back to something, to some strange common point, like, well, you can be running late for something. I mean, I, for one, am late on a regular basis to work, but you know,
yeah,
it's not about me, but it's recognizable. And that's what's sort of interesting about it. He takes this and makes it in some way a recognizable frame of what work is by making it visible.
And all of a sudden, yes, and then her work shifts from being invisible to the family. She's been hard at work while they're away at school. You know, the mother's obviously away at work herself, the father's away at work. And you see, you know, Cleo, she's running to get Pepe, then they're walking home, and then all the kids are together, and then right away we do see her shifting from, again, the insider status, outsider status, back again. We see all the children together, and one of the children casually mentioning this extrajudicial killing that happens, and that he sees it. He sees another child who's shot by this paramilitary group of people, and Cleo says, oh, that's terrible. The mother comes home, and the conversation immediately stops and shifts to, you know, maybe what did you do during the day? It's this shift automatically where...
And she starts detailing to Cleo what she has to do.
Go pick up the dry cleaning. Yeah. And so it's this really kind of seamless thing that you see that Cleo's drifting in and out of the family, doing work. She's in with them. She's out in the kitchen. And so I think that it's something, I think part of why the movie really is resonating with people is because anyone who has this kind of relationship to work, which I think is most of us, you're constantly at work, then you're not at work. You're having to go back and forth. You're an Indigenous person. You're a person of color. So you're straddling these two lines, these two distinct different worlds that expect you to fully function.
Mm-hmm. And that specifically domestic work is what enables the family
to exist.
And I think that's made clear. I don't want to jump too far ahead because there's some great examples of you know, how the family's oblivion to Cleo's circumstances is expressed, and it's expressed throughout the film, that they just, you know, as seamlessly as she moves in and out of, you know, this insider, outsider, visible,
embedded,
invisible, that she's embedded with the family and not embedded with the family, you know, she is experiences the frustration and hostility from the mother of the family, who is another very important piece of this film, is that there was a divorce happening. And we have to remember, this is 1970, 1971. So in the context of, you know, especially when Del Toro talks about the morals of the time, the film is really taking up storylines that challenge us to understand something about the morals of the time, the political conditions of the time,
the fracturing of the family.
Right. And the fracturing of families on the perimeter, the outskirts where people's land is being stolen. We understand that Cleo's mother's lost her land.
That's casually mentioned by Adela, you know, yeah. I heard your mother lost her land.
Right. And at the end of the film, the mother is saying, you know,
the
mother of the family wants to go, the kids want to go to Disneyland. She says, well, we can't afford Disneyland, but we could go to Oaxaca where Cleo's family is. And we all know by that point as an audience that her mother's had her land stolen, that people are being murdered and their land is being taken.
And yet the children cheer, we're going to Oaxaca. Yay.
Yay. I mean, there's a, yeah. So,
There is one moment that we wanted to talk about, potentially the scene on the rooftop. Again, Cleo's hard at work. She's doing laundry, and she's doing laundry by hand. And then you see that one of the kids stops. They were playing a game. And of course, it's the youngest child, who we understand to be Cuaron's character. And he stops playing, and you see all of a sudden Cleo embeds in his daydream. It's a wonderful, touching moment, but again, terrifying, because you see his character holding a gun.
Yeah, his little white body.
Holding a gun,
and Cleo with her brown skin, and they're head to head, and the stark image is then followed with, as the camera pans the rooftops, to reveal there are all of these women working on the rooftops, out of sight
of the families,
but not out of sight of each other. And you mentioned that you've had that your response was that feeling that you know we may feel alone, but in some sense people are not alone.
You're never alone, and
never alone. Yeah,
you know, I definitely feel the movie was this juxtaposition of both this, it's an exploration again of formative pain, the fracturing of the family, the fracturing of a country, formative love, because undoubtedly the children love Cleo. And we've discussed this over and over. She saves the family mm-hmm. in more ways than one. Quite literally during the movie, she mm-hmm. saves the children. Mm-hmm. But every day she saves them. She keeps that household running.
Right.
They couldn't do it without her.
Right. And we see that starkly. There's so much to talk about, and we're getting close to the end of our time. You know, some of the issues that have come up with questions around point of view and what that means for Cleo. This is not a narrated story. There's very little, it's not dialogue driven. So we do see a lot from her perspective, but the film is clearly Cuarón's creation.
Correct.
And a co-creation in many ways without a script that had much dialogue, it was filmed in continuity, is that right?
Correct. Because it was filmed in a
chronological order.
So that the characters could develop themselves.
Right. And we would argue, and perhaps we'll have to revisit this and maybe have some extras on our post, that Cleo has much agency and voice in this film. And we highly encourage people to check it out. Hollywood Theater is playing it in 70mm at the beginning of February. It is to be seen in the theater. And I would highly also encourage people to see what's there and make sense of what's in the film and allow those images to speak as Del Toro requested.
Absolutely.
And frames it as it's a fresco. It's not a portrait. Anyway. All right. Well, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to The Old Mole.
Thanks,
Denise. This is Denise Morris and Victoria Saucedo, review of Roma.
Thanks. Bye. One last thing. That was a song, Ciudad Perdida. It was performed by La Revolución de Emiliano Zapata. Thanks.
And that title means Lost City, is that correct?
Correct. All right. Thanks. Bye.